You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Alex Dieterer. This is the WFHB Local News for Monday, February 22nd, 2021.
Later in the program, we have the latest edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor. In today's segment, we ask listener-posed questions to Deputy Mayor Mick Reneisen on community issues. More on that in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, a law aimed to protect homeless encampments got its first reading in City Council last week. More on that in today's headlines. But first, we turn to WFHB correspondent Aaron Comforti for today's local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Monday, February 22nd. I'm Aaron Comforti. In a letter addressed to IU President Michael McRobbie and the Board of Trustees, the Indiana University Geography Department went on the record in their support of the IU Graduate Workers Coalition campaign to end the fees, that is, the mandatory graduate and international fees. In the letter, which was delivered on Friday, the department wrote, quote, "Our stipends are already lower than most of our peer institutions, and our fees are higher. We are losing our ability to compete for top students." The department noted that many students have to take second jobs on top of their full-time studies. The financial precarity, the department wrote, is an unnecessary obstacle. That's especially so for some graduate students who have families and other caretaking responsibilities. At least one grad student, the letter noted, has had to sell blood plasma to make ends meet. The Geography Department's letter came a week after more than 100 IU faculty signed a petition supporting the graduate worker fee strike, which is a part of the campaign to end the mandatory and international fees. In education news, local teachers with the Monroe County Education Association will wear all black on Wednesday to, quote, "show the darkness facing Indiana public schools." The protest is a part of a campaign by the Indiana State Teachers Association, the state's largest teachers union, to raise awareness about underfunding and COVID-19 safety concerns in the state's schools. With the opening of the new biennial legislative session in the Indiana State House, lawmakers there put forth a number of bills that the organization says will actually reduce funding for public schools. That's all for your local news brief from WFHB. I'm Aaron Comforti.
Monroe County Health Administrator Penny Caudill spoke about COVID-19 vaccination clinic closure procedures during the February 19th COVID-19 press conference. She mentioned patients can choose how to be notified of a closure.
When you register for an appointment and you put a phone number in, they will ask you how you want to be alerted, for instance, in an emergency or if an appointment needs to be changed for some other reason. If you put in a phone number, it is really asking you for a cell phone number because it's going to send you a text if it needs to contact you. So if you have a cell number as opposed to a landline, use that instead of the landline. The landline is helpful for us because we could go in and see that and go ahead and contact somebody that way. The other thing is that you can put in an email. If you use email, if that's your preferred means of contact, make sure you're checking your spam email to make sure that it's not in there. I know we all get lots of things that go into that spam. We did alert the state and they are checking on it. We had several people who indicated that they did not get an email about it. So the state is looking at that. They do have the means, as I understand it, to see when the email went out, when a text went out. But I know sometimes we get things stuck in spam.
Caudill mentioned due to weather, fewer COVID-19 tests have been taken. She reported this may cause a lower reported rate of community spread. IU Health South Central Region President Brian Shockney stated the COVID-19 numbers saw a continued decrease.
We continue to see a decline in our COVID inpatients, which means the severity of the illness and the spread of the illness is also much lower in our community. As of yesterday, our IU Health ICU statewide were at 62% occupied regionally, and our IU Health ICUs were 39% occupied here in Bloomington. This continued decrease in ICU numbers is a welcome change for our team members, but most importantly for our patients. Our healthcare teams have been working tirelessly through the pandemic now for almost a year, as Commissioner Thomas had said, and we still have a great deal of work to do, but these lower COVID numbers give us hope, give us comfort, and give us relief.
Monroe County Commissioner Julie Thomas stated about 10% of the Monroe County population has been vaccinated. Indiana University Assistant Vice President for Engagement, Kirk White, mentioned vaccinated frontline workers may have a chance at obtaining tickets to watch NCAA games.
The tournament that will be hosted at Indiana University at Simon Scott Assembly Hall, the 18th through the 20th of March, will welcome up to 500 spectators. Now, before you run and jump to look at your ticket numbers, that includes the coaches, the staff members, families of team members, and things like that. So that will take the majority of those 500 spectator tickets. Any remaining tickets, we hope to be able to allocate to first responders and healthcare providers in Monroe County because of the great work that they have done and because they will have been vaccinated. And that will, of course, control the spread.
Caudill stated vaccination rates could factor into decisions of lessening restrictions.
A new bill aimed to protect homeless encampments received a first reading during last Wednesday's City Council meeting. According to Ordinance 2106, the bill would amend the Bloomington Municipal Code to add protections for people experiencing homelessness. The ordinance would require the city to give at least a 15-day notice before removing encampments from public spaces. The legislation comes in response to two evictions to people experiencing homelessness at Seminary Park, issued by the Office of the Mayor. City Clerk Nicole Bolden read the title and synopsis of the bill during the City Council meeting.
Adopted 9-0. It has been moved and seconded to be introduced and read by the clerk by title and synopsis only. Will the clerk please read?
Ordinance 2106 to amend Title II, Administration and Personnel of the Bloomington Municipal Code regarding adding Chapter 2.87, Protections for People Experiencing Homelessness. The synopsis is as follows. This ordinance is sponsored by Councilmember Flaherty, Councilmember Rosenbarger, and Councilmember Piedmont Smith, and amends the Bloomington Municipal Code to add a new Chapter 2.87 entitled Protections for People Experiencing Homelessness. The new chapter includes procedures to be followed by the city before displacing individuals experiencing homelessness from certain public spaces. The procedures applicable to the city would include a notice requirement, collaboration with relevant service providers, a prohibition on displacing individuals if there is insufficient available housing, storage of personal property, and the ability to designate certain limited areas where these procedures would apply. Note, this ordinance was revised after distribution in the legislative packet, but before introduction at the regular session on February 17, 2021. The revision corrected a reference in the definition of camp to section 030G.
Council members Matt Flaherty, Isabel Piedmont Smith, and Kate Rosenbarger sponsored the bill. The council's committee of the whole is set to discuss the bill at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday. The Monroe County Human Rights Commission discussed a homelessness bill of rights in its January 27th meeting, which is similar in language to the city council ordinance. Vox Booker, Monroe County Human Rights Commissioner, presented an unhoused bill of rights to the Bloomington Human Rights Commission. Booker described the reason for the proposal in the commission meeting.
My idea with this is really to create a groundwork that says we're going to recognize the right of everyone to live in our community. Right now, I feel like the law kind of has a bias towards folks who are able to afford to live in the standard housing style of you know, either owning a home or renting a home. This would allow some dignity and also some basic safety for folks that, due to maybe mental illness or some type of financial circumstance, can't meet that level.
The proposal is partly modeled after the Indianapolis Homeless Bill of Rights, which was adopted in March 2015. Commissioner Booker touched on some of the highlights of the proposal. He said some members of the commission were concerned with tackling the issue of homelessness in such a short time frame.
Some of the council members were concerned that because of the expediency that they needed to move with to kind of tackle this issue in the community, that they might not be able to come to a consensus or an agreement on a full unhoused Bill of Rights, but they are going to move forward with some of the proposal, which was basically parroting the ordinance that Indianapolis already has on their books, which will create a requirement for there to be a 15-day notice if there were going to be a eviction of a unhoused encampment. There is the cravat for that if there was some type of emergency that the city could move. Also, the strongest restriction is going to be that the encampment can't be broke up from, and it's limited to public perks, but the encampment can't be broken up if there isn't transitional or stable housing for them to move into.
The Unhoused Bill of Rights received a first reading on February 3rd, and it is scheduled to receive a second reading with public comment at a later date.
The Bloomington Park Commissioner heard an appeal of a proposed tree removal at Low Cascades Park. Appellant Susan Glowitz argued younger trees could be removed from the opposing street side.
There is a desire to widen the bank in order to slow the flow of the water to decrease the erosion of the bank, which makes sense. I'm curious if it's possible to widen the bank in the eastern rather than the western direction, as the western direction has the mature trees that I'm concerned about. The eastern direction has trees as well, but they are younger or a different variety, so they're smaller. And many of them have roots that are jutting out and over the water, and some look like they're going to topple over as well. So I'm curious if that's a possibility.
Glowitz mentioned the street width could be decreased if the street were to be turned into a pedestrian-only street. She also mentioned the mature trees would be a great community and habitat loss. Urban forester Aaron Hatch stated the trees must be removed before April 1st.
I will say that this project is being regulated by the Indiana bat restrictions that come in place with certain tree removals. So there is a timeline that we're allowed to remove trees as part of this project, which would be between September and April 1st. So there is a need to conduct this project within that timeline.
Hatch said the current 23 trees were chosen after drastic project modifications from the original number. Operations and Development Division Director Tim Street said the stormwater flow to Cascades has seen an increase.
There's more and more stormwater flowing into Cascades because of more and more non-permeable surfaces that have been constructed. As that stormwater has flowed into that creek, which, I think we have to remember, stop sharing here, is not in its natural state. You know, it was built into a chute many, many years ago. The water has nowhere to go. It funnels, it increases sedimentation downstream and degrades the quality of the watershed, both there and downstream in the Bean Blossom watershed, all the way out to the lower White Fork watershed.
Street stated the erosion created safety hazards in the park. Hatch stated mitigation trees would be planted at a 5-to-1 ratio, the trees being 4 to 6 feet in height. Commission members unanimously denied the appeal.
On Thursday, Republican lawmakers shouted down and booed black legislators while debating on a bill that Democrats call discriminatory. Representative Greg Porter, a Democrat in Indianapolis, walked off the House floor after warning that House Bill 1367 contains discriminatory language. The bill would allow students in Green Township in St. Joseph County to leave the racially diverse South Bend Community School Corporation to join the predominantly white John Glenn School Corporation. House representatives deny that the bill is discriminatory. Representative Jake Teshka from South Bend, who authored the bill, maintains that it's a transportation issue. He says that students in Green Township are already attending John Glenn schools and that his legislation would help resolve transportation issues. Indiana Democrats are calling on House Senator Todd Houston to hold Representative Jim Lucas and the entire GOP accountable for, quote, 1960s-style racism against black Hoosiers, end quote. House Speaker Houston urged members to show proper respect and to address issues in an appropriate dialogue last Thursday. Then, on Friday, Republican lawmaker Jim Lucas posted a racist meme on social media. The meme he posted shows a doctored image of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. pointing to a whiteboard. The whiteboard says, quote, "Calling someone privileged because they are white is judging someone by the color of their skin," end quote. John Zody, chairman of the Indiana Democratic Party, said in a statement, quote, "What Hoosiers saw last Thursday was a flashpoint of racism that we only once read about in a classroom. Voters' trust in the state's elected leadership will be demolished if Speaker Todd Houston fails to hold these bad actors accountable," end quote. After Greg Porter walked off the House floor, testimony was given by Representative Vernon Smith from Gary. He described his own experiences as a black man being the target of discrimination, including his encounters with police. Representative Jim Lucas then walked off the House floor during Smith's testimony.
Monroe County Public Library strategist for staff development and projects, Barra Swinson, announced the 2020 Pioneer Grant recipients during the February 17th MCPL Board of Trustees meeting. She mentioned multiple projects applied for the grant.
Every year we have a nomination, a grant application process. Just internally to our staff who are present ideas and compete with each other for the money that we have set aside for this project, sponsored by the Friends of the Library. And one of the big requirements is that whatever is being suggested, whether it be a long-term project like a new collection or a particular single goal as a program, that it has to benefit our users, our public and patrons.
Swinson reported Bethany Turrentine and Kim Baker were awarded funds for a dyslexia project. Baker mentioned dyslexia has a high presence in the community.
Dyslexia is really prevalent, right? Nationally, it's estimated that 10 to 20% of our population has dyslexia. And here in Indiana, it's estimated that 20% of our children have dyslexia. And dyslexia isn't something that goes away. I don't have the statistics for the adults, right? But if 20% of our children have dyslexia, they're going to grow up and become adults with dyslexia. So we can kind of guess that about 20% of our adult population also has dyslexia.
Baker stated the grant funds would support staff training on dyslexia awareness. She mentioned 30 staff members already completed the training. She spoke of other project accomplishments.
We've created new information and resource pages on dyslexia on our website, created a Celebrate Dyslexia book list for youth. Communication and marketing has helped me create new signage in children's to follow the International Federation of Library Associations guidelines on providing dyslexia services in libraries. Created a dyslexia awareness video program to spread dyslexia awareness in our community. It has 244 views to date. And we started to seek out further training in dyslexia for the staff, which is one of the things that our staff who completed the survey indicated that they wanted as a follow-up. They just want more training on this so they can learn even more about this topic.
Baker mentioned education kits would also be created for children. Swinson reported Edwin Falwell and Jen Hoffman also received a grant for adventure backpacks. Falwell spoke about what would be included in the backpacks.
For us, we conceived of them and assembled the adventure backpacks with the aim to kind of provide tools for aiding people in their outdoor adventures and to help provide easier access to outdoor experiences for library patrons. The tools that we include in the backpack include field guides to flowers, to birds, to trees, a set of binoculars, a compass, a simple first aid kit, maps, and activities from the State Parks Department. We've also included in each backpack a voucher good for free admission to any Indiana state park. We worked with the DNR to pioneer this pilot program. The backpacks each check out for 2 weeks and cannot be renewed in order to make this limited resource available to the widest possible audience. In total, the whole of the adventure backpack collection costs around $700, with about 10% of that cost earmarked for replacements of consumables like Band-Aids and printed products, and about a third of the total budget being spent on the Park Pass voucher system.
Falwell mentioned adventure backpacks were checked out a total of 17 times in 2020.
On Saturday afternoon, a water main broke in downtown Bloomington at the corner of 4th Street and Walnut Street. Holly McLaughlin, communications manager for the City of Bloomington Utilities, talked to WFHB in a phone conversation earlier today. She said cold temperatures likely had to do with the water main break.
So we don't know exactly the reason for this main break or most of our main breaks. We have been collecting data over the years, and we've analyzed that data, and certainly cold temperatures are a factor in increased main breaks and also temperature fluctuations.
McLaughlin clarified that it was not a broken pipe, but rather a broken valve, which caused the traffic disruption on Saturday. She described the difference between a water pipe and a water valve.
So the valve, just like at home, when you turn the knob and water comes out of your faucet, that's a valve. So it's just the part that screws up and down into the pipe that turns the water on and off. So when we have our valves open in the water system, the water is flowing through the pipe. And then when we close the valve, that is when the water stops there at that point. So it's like a threaded valve that you can screw up and down that turns the water on and off in that pipe.
She said the pipe which contained the broken valve was a 12-inch cast iron pipe installed in 1973. Some addresses lost water service as a result of the water break. McLaughlin provided safety precautions to those who are affected by broken water mains.
Anytime the water pressure in the pipes goes under 20 PSI, we are required to issue a precautionary boil water advisory. Because what happens when you lose pressure in the water pipe, like if you think about the pipe again, think about the pipes in your house, the water pressure is on all the time and sort of pushing outwards and against the sides of the pipe. Now, when we lower the pressure to 20 PSI or less, it can create a vacuum inside that pipe, which could suck in a contaminant. So what we're looking for with those precautionary boil water advisories is a time frame for us to get a water sample, take it to our lab and get it tested, and just make sure no contaminants got in while we were working on the pipe. I do always like to encourage folks when they're learning about water main breaks. A good rule of thumb is if you've lost water, to boil that water for 24 hours after your water service is returned. I mean, that's I think is a good general rule for folks. And that way you don't have to worry about finding your specific address or ensuring that you get the information at a certain time. But if you do want to know specifically if your address is affected, we use the Monroe County Alert System, which allows us to call, text, or email people as soon as that boil water advisory goes into effect.
The incident marked the 8th water main break since the start of this year. McLaughlin described efforts by the CBU to replace dated mains.
We do have a water main replacement program, and that's where we have a certain amount of our budget set aside every year for replacement of a pipe. So there's several factors that we look at to determine where our next project is going to be. But once we've identified where our next project is going to be, our engineers work to create a plan, and then either our staff or a contractor is hired to then go in and do that project and replace all of the water pipes in that area. So currently we have a certain amount of money and we're able to do a certain amount of pipes per year. And we are looking to increase that in the future with a future water rate increase.
The proposed water rate increase would expand funding to replace worn-out water mains, so the CBU can replace 3 miles of water mains per year. Since Saturday, 4 additional water mains have busted, says McLaughlin. She mentioned the locations that were affected.
We have a main break at 6th and Grant, which is downtown. We have a main break at Allen and Lincoln in the Bryan Park neighborhood, St. James and Forrester in the Hyde Park neighborhood, and Old State Road 37 in Fairfax, which is south of Bloomington.
If your address is affected by broken water mains, you will receive a notification from the Monroe County Alert System.
Now it's time for A Few Minutes with the Mayor, a weekly segment where Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton answers listener-posed questions on community issues. Due to a scheduling conflict, Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton was unavailable for this week's A Few Minutes with the Mayor interview. This week, Assistant News Director Sydney Foreman speaks with Bloomington Deputy Mayor Mick Renison in Hamilton's place.
Community members posted questions on our social media via Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, posing questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton about current issues. Today, on A Few Minutes with the Mayor, John Hamilton answers these questions. This week, Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton was unavailable for the interview, so I spoke with Bloomington Deputy Mayor Mick Renison. That interview is as follows. So the first question that I have is, when is the COVID-19 vaccination age restriction expected to drop down to 60 years of age and above?
From what we understand from the state, which of course determines who the age cohorts will be and tells county health throughout the respective 92 counties in Indiana, it appears to be that later this week or certainly next week, the 60-year-old age group and up should be eligible for vaccination locally. So that's very exciting. That's obviously with each decade of the age group that we go down into the younger age groups, the more people are going to be a part of that cohort. So this is going to get, I think, approximately 7,000 of our Bloomington Monroe County residents would be eligible for vaccination when that is officially opened up by the state.
Awesome. And do you know if that is expected to continue as just a 5-year increment of decreasing that age? Or are there other parameters that they're looking at?
It's my understanding they are looking at some other parameters, maybe some people that are experiencing some kind of pre-existing condition or something that might compromise their immune systems. So that may change. But then again, they could very well stay with some sort of age delineation model. We just aren't quite sure. That's being, again, discussed at the state level. I would say that I'm very pleased to the response of our community health providers in getting shots in arms so far. Both IU Health and the County Health Department are doing a wonderful job with their doses of getting them out as efficiently and quickly as possible. The scheduling's been great, albeit we've had some snow weather cancellation challenges last week, which were unfortunate but uncontrollable. But I really want to give a good shout out to the two community partners that are involved in getting vaccines in arms.
All right. So the next question that I have is, the Monroe County School Corporation Board sent a letter to Indiana Governor Holcomb asking for teachers to get priority in the COVID-19 vaccinations. Do you see this happening at the state or local level?
Yeah, that's another great question for those that are able to decide it at the state level. It would seem to me that if we were given control over our local options, which we're not, mind you, but if we were, we would have a list of people at our workforce, for example, at the city, that we would prioritize given the nature of their work and exposures that they have based on the kind of work that they do. To me, teachers, if I were in charge of that, and I'm not, nor are we at the city, but if it were me, I would think that the teachers would be a logical group, regardless of age, to be put in a higher priority cohort because of the work that they do and that we expect them to do. And that obviously would allow maybe the students to return on a more regular schedule, which I think we at the city believe is a good thing for the health and development of our young people in our city and county.
The next question I have is, can someone who has received the vaccination still transmit the COVID-19 virus?
I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. My answer to that, based on the information that I read, suggests that even after you're vaccinated with both doses, you still are a transmitter. You still can carry and spread the disease. You may be asymptomatic. You may, in fact, have less ill effect from it and contract COVID. That's still a possibility from what I understand from reading, but that you are not virus spreading free even after you've been vaccinated. So therefore, wearing a mask, continuing to physically distance and wash your hands is going to be important for those who have been vaccinated.
Moving away from the COVID-19 topic a little bit, the next question that I have comes from WFHB listener Simon, and they're asking how anti-panhandling signs work to discourage panhandling.
So I'm not aware that we have anti-panhandling signs. We have an ordinance that says you must be a certain distance away from the entrances to various businesses so that you're not impeding the way for people to partake in commerce. But I do not believe we have a large spread or really even any signage that suggests that panhandling is not allowed, although there are some places where people do panhandle that are not safe for the panhandler and may, in fact, disturb sort of traffic flow, too, if people are stopping to try to give folks that are panhandling some money. Then that can cause, you know, rear-ending and things, too. So I could understand if there were signs in those situations. That's to protect the panhandler. So the question was more how it deters it. My answer would be without signs, I'm not quite sure what the listener is referencing.
The very last question that I have for today is the State of City Address is to be held this Thursday. Could you speak about when that will be held and how people can listen?
Absolutely. It'll be Thursday, the 25th of February at 7 p.m. It will be a Zoom delivered State of the City Address. It is always a city council meeting as well. So the city council will be convened and they will convene a meeting and then they'll turn it over to Mayor Hamilton to give us the state of the city. And it'll be a Zoom link that we'll share publicly through all of our media sources on our website. And the best place to find that would be either at the mayor's office website, bloomington.in.gov. / Office of the Mayor, or you can also find it on our Facebook page where there's an Office of the Mayor Facebook posting as well that'll indicate time and details of how you may access the State of the City.
Do you have a question for Mayor John Hamilton? Comment that question on this coming week's post for a few minutes with the mayor to have your question answered. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Aaron Comforti, Cade Young, and Sydney Foreman in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sydney Foreman.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Engineer and executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Alex Dieterer.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for With Good Reason, coming up next on WFHB.